This is the Life Truth Network.
Quest for our Truth, Episode 337.
Quest for Truth, presented by Protectorate Productions and HPN, Helsley Podcast Network. Now located at life-truth.com. And now, here is your host, Keith Helsley. Oh, come on. Do I really have to read this? Solving all your problems and making your dreams come true. I think I might chew myself.
Here we go. Hey, everyone. This is your host, Keith. And it's time for a Quest for Truth. I'm alone here in Church House Studio at the moment. In a little bit, I will have a friend of mine join me. You've heard him on the podcast before. His name is Tony Rangel. He is a bivocational pastor. He has a job that he works during the day, but he's a pastor at Cross Point Southern Baptist Church. There we go. Almost couldn't say the name there at first. It's actually in Edwardsville. If you want to look him up on the internet, they have a YouTube channel. If you're ever in the area, stop in and check out the services. Small little church, but definitely some good teaching. I know Tony very well, and we've known him for years. Probably one of my longest running friends. I wanted to have him on the show. And I wanted to talk to him about something that's kind of right up his alley. And so he actually telephoned me while he was on a walk. You'll hear that coming up here. And I explained to him what I did on the podcast just last week about racial topics. So I kind of felt a little, out of sorts because, hey, like I said, a middle-aged white guy talking about racial issues, what kind of street cred is that? But Tony is definitely a person of race, and so I thought, hey, good friend, long-time friend, call him up. He's kind of busy, so it's hard to get a hold of, so I was glad he called. We didn't talk an awful long time, but we had a pretty decent discussion. Now, in the recording that you're about to hear, to begin with, the audio is a little bit wonky because, again, he was out for a walk. There's some kind of, pixelated spots. it's not so really all that bad. Shouldn't make a big deal. And then I had some technical problems in my office that led to a disconnection, and so I had to switch over real fast. And, I'll tell you more about that whenever we get there. Here we go, right after some messages from the Christian podcast community while I get things switched over to play this audio clip. Here we go.
Can you answer the following questions for your children or for the person to whom you are witnessing? Number one, is the New Testament reliable? Two, can you explain the Trinity to me? Three, how is Jesus both God and man? And a slew of other questions you will be able to answer if you get Andrew Rappaport's new book, What Do We Believe? It will help you a ton. Get your copy at whatdowebelievebook.com, whatdowebelievebook.com.
Did you know that Striving for Eternity provides speakers and seminars that we would come to your church and disciple your people? We have seminars on the Bible interpretation made easy, creation science, evangelism, presuppositional apologetics, even on sexual abuse. These are just some of the many things that we could provide for your church. Consider inviting one of our speakers to your church. You can contact us at speaker@strivingforeternity.org.
Okay, now it's time for the main topic.
Main topic.
You can go off any direction you want.
And just, I think I'll cover it from both sides.
Now, just to be clear, just so our listeners know, this is Tony Ringel. He's a longtime friend. I've known Tony since we were like third grade, fourth grade. Tony is of Mexican descent, so he always fit the category of somebody who is racial. You know, and a non-white, we'll put it that way.
Yeah. Are you doing the podcast right now, or you want to record this?
I hit the record button already, so you can start talking anytime you want.
Okay. Yeah, you are correct that I am of Mexican descent. The grandparents of my father's side migrated here from Mexico back at the turn of the century as legal immigrants, bought a farm, and father and all the other kids were all born here in America, Kansas City, Kansas. As a matter of fact, he was always proud of saying Kansas City, Kansas, not Missouri. But that's neither here nor there. A little known fact, though, is that the grandparents on my mother's side actually migrated here from Ireland at about the same time. And so they were all born here, and legal immigrants, and all the kids are born here. So I'm actually of Irish descent. So sometimes the crowd that don't know me that I'm Irish, and of course they start to
give you double take.
They give some funny looks and start whispering among themselves, and I follow it up with what, I don't look Irish, and they're like, no, you don't. And that's kind of funny because if you look at my two sisters, they both got the Irish genes, and you would not know that they were Hispanic. Neither one of them can get a suntan. They walk outside and they immediately.
You talking about Cindy?
And it's kind of interesting. They both, they have the dark hair, but they both are very very
fair,
light complected.
And skin, yeah, a funny story, real quick. I remember when we were kids. I don't know what grade, probably fifth or sixth grade. In the summer, we went away on a summer vacation. And I thought, I spent all week long on my summer vacation working on my tan. And I get back to town, I go, hey, Tony, check this out. Look at my tan. Hold my arm up to yours. Like, okay, no big deal. I was kind of close to the same color you was. Hey, let's go hang out to the park this afternoon. By the end of the day, you go, hey, show me your arm again, Keith. I'm like, oh, yeah. He was like, I was about like walnut shade. You were like pecan shade. Like, I hate you.
Yeah, not a problem to get a suntan over the years, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, so through the years, I was actually born in East St. Louis, and it was, I think, around 70% African-American at the time, around 30% white, and 1% or less Hispanic. Don't know of any Asians that lived there at all. If they did, they probably weren't counted because the percentage was so low. But through that, racism obviously was a big deal. I still remember the day my brother came and picked us up because some guy got shot. And he was an African-American, and he was supposed to be a big deal. And I'd never been too young to really understand the name Martin Luther King. Oh, yeah. Or anything associated with his name, but they were saying that there was going to be some big riots, and so my brother came and picked us up from school that day. We normally walked about three blocks home, I think it was, and so he came to pick us up that day for our safety, but to my knowledge, in our area, we didn't see any type of civil unrest or anything, although I was aware, watching TV, of things like that going on in other places, obviously. But at the time, there was a call for calm and quiet. So I don't think it was quite as prolific as you might see today. So like I was telling Keith in our prior conversation, over the years, having grown up in that environment and then moving into South Roxana, which was primarily all white. I only know of one African-American student there.
Yeah.
When we grew up. And If I sound like I'm out of breath, it's because I'm going for a walk.
I know for the longest time there was one other Mexican family in town. They worked at the oil refinery, and then you guys moved to town. And then it wasn't until we were in the fifth or sixth grade that, like I said, the African-American family moved to town. They didn't live in town. They lived up on Kendall Hill, which actually is a white-collar neighborhood.
Right.
But he came to school there, a little blue-collar town, South Roxanne.
Yeah. Yeah. But having grown up in an all-white neighborhood as well as a mostly black neighborhood, like I was telling Keith, you know, I've heard just about every name you can imagine over the years. And I think to some extent, looking back, I'd seen some discrimination. I know I was just talking to somebody yesterday that I noticed that there was a couple of teachers in particular in sixth grade who seemed to really give some of us a hard time, and I was one of them. But I couldn't then and I can't now blame it on racism. Looking back, I took a class in sociology my sophomore year in college, and they started talking about different types of discrimination, and one of them was economic, that sometimes the rich discriminate against the poor, as well as the poor sometimes discriminate against rich kids. And looking back, I realized that the kids that were picked on were the ones, the free lunch kids, the ones that came from the poor side of town. So, discrimination, racism, inequality isn't just limited to the color of your skin. Gender, I've seen boys favored by teachers. I've seen girls favored by teachers. It's not just a matter of racism.
Have
I think we're focusing
read,
on racism today.
Read Robin DiAngelo's book about white fragility?
I have not read that book.
Okay. If you ever want to drive an ice pick through your brain, go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
Because her book makes no sense. But I have read at least parts of it because I was trying to take notes on various things. And, you know, that's one thing she points out is that there is class discrimination, where it's not just color of your skin, although that's her main point.
Yeah.
But there is class discrimination where rich against poor. And it's just as real. But her main focus is, you know, it's all about skin color. And if you're white, you're bad.
So now we move on to what that is, and basically it's a favoritism or just the opposite, discrimination. It gets someone because of their skin color, their racial heritage, those kinds of things. Sometimes the skin color doesn't always reveal the background. For example, my two sisters, you would not know they are Hispanic. My background, you would not know I'm Irish. So from what I understand, there's a big rift between the English and the Irish. And I know one guy in particular who was constantly talking about he was Irish, and he was talking about the hardships that the English had put on the Irish people.
Because the Irish were enslaved as well. So black folks in this country talk about slavery. They don't understand how harshly the Irish had it under slavery.
Yeah.
And for probably just as long.
Yeah, so you see that type of thing pop up in more than one place, which is what I was trying to get at. But so as far as the other is concerned, when we're talking about just basically racism based on skin color or your heritage, I have seen that both a positive and a negative. Of course, you know, there's always those that there was a teacher when I was in first grade, and I was not aware of the situation exactly. I just knew that no matter what I did, I would always get in trouble. In particular, this little girl, we sat in the front row. This little girl kept talking to me, and she was a little white girl, but she kept talking to me, and the teacher had told us to talk to each other, and so I was trying to ignore her, and I knew the teacher could hear her because she was a fairly loud little girl, and finally I looked over and I said, shh, and the teacher said, Tony, is that you talking again? get out the back of the class. So I got swatted and got sent to the back of the class. Nothing happened at all. My sister stumbled on that. She saw me in the back of the class, wanted to know what was going on. Well, she kind of did her own little sleuthing and investigation. Apparently, this teacher had been noted. She was an African American teacher, and she. And so I think that is what drove her to punish me and not the other little girl. That was just one incident of many until that teacher later was either fired or moved on. I don't know what happened, but she left in the middle of the year. But anyway, so you know, I see things like that happen. On the other hand, when I was in Marine Corps boot camp, we were...
All right, and behind the scenes moment here, as my audio kind of stopped right about there, but just a shade before that, my computer says, I got a low battery. I didn't know I was operating on my battery backup. My battery backup kind of faded out on me, and so I was frantically reaching for my backup digital recorder, and there's just a tiny bit of the conversation that didn't get caught. And what Tony was getting ready to say about his boot camp experience is that he experienced a little bit of reverse racism when he had a drill instructor who was Hispanic, who after a rigorous obstacle course run, and believe me, Marine Corps boot camp has a pretty rigorous obstacle course. It's not the worst one in the world, because I've been to that one too. But it's pretty rough. And he got off the course, and this drill instructor called him over, had him take a break, got him a soda, got him a candy bar. And so he's relaxing, which is highly unusual for drill instructors. They just do not do that. And another recruit came up who happened to be a white guy, and of course the drill instructor jumped on his case. So just a touch of reverse discrimination there, even in boot camp. I won't say anti-discrimination because I don't believe in that, but reverse. You throw the poles the other direction there. And that's what got cut off. So here we go. He picks it up with another example of a racial incident. So here we go.
Contact me. I'd love to be a part of your life. I just want to tell you one thing that your family didn't warn you about. And he said, what's that? He said, I'm black. And you could have heard a pin drop because this guy did not look African-American at all. And at the time, but once he said that, you start noticing the broad nose and some of the other features. But his skin tone totally belied the fact that he was of African-American descent. So then he starts talking about how he connects with the African-American side of the family and all the wealth and stuff that he experienced on the white side of the family, all the privileges that he had seemed to evaporate whenever he went to the African-American side of the family. And it was a different world. And he starts talking about how when he's with that side of the family, how people in restaurants or out in public react differently than when he was with the family that he grew up with. And he started experiencing a whole different world. And so he started to better understand the plight of the African-American. And I got to thinking about that. And I think they made a movie about this one time where somebody changed places with a different race. And
there was a movie or a book.
I know there's a Twilight Zone episode like that where this guy... he's a Ku Klux Klan kind of guy, and he ends up becoming African-American through some fluke, and then has to live life like that and experience.
I think Eddie Murphy also did an SNL sketch along that line once, too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I must have missed that one. But so, you know, you could just imagine what would happen if you suddenly found out that you were one of these races that gets discriminated against, and maybe even somebody else discriminates against. But the unconscious bias, though, is more of a form where, you know, most people say, I'm not racist, and I think
whenever a white person might say, I'm not racist, and then a black person says, just because you denied it proves that you are. That's the argument.
That's the kind of thing that I think does not do anybody any good. But I think that most people want to do the right thing, and I think there are some that are just deeply ingrained racist, and some that are that hide it very well. But there are others that have what's called unconscious bias, and that is that they do racist things, but they don't realize that they're doing that. And I think, you know, and sometimes when they're awakened to the fact that they're doing something like that, then they're like, oh, okay, you know, didn't have the intent of doing that, and so they're right. willing to make a change.
And it seems like that often all it takes is, like you said, just a little bit of a wake-up call to realize, oh my gosh, I've been doing this thing. Whereas some of the people, like the White Fragility book, they try to get you to apply your white guilt to recompensate the other groups, like to oversteer, basically. Like, oh, that's just going the wrong way.
Yeah, I don't buy into critical race theory or white guilt or any other garbage that's going around right now. I don't think that serves to help solve any of the problems at all.
Well, a critical race theory, just to take this bunny trailer real quick. I did a podcast. No, I didn't do a podcast. I did some blog articles on this. And essentially, it is critical means you're using logic applied to something. There's nothing logical about critical race theory. It is about race, and it is definitely a theory, but it's not critical whatsoever.
Yeah, I think in reality, it's racism for those who hate whites.
Yeah.
And I don't call that reverse discrimination. I don't believe there is reverse discrimination.
I tell people that with racism, there is no anti-racism. It's like when you learn math, you have absolute value. A negative one holds the same absolute value as a positive one. So if you can't have anti-racism, you just have racism in a different direction. It's still racism.
Yep.
It still holds the same weight.
Yeah, I think there is racism from Hispanics on white, racism from whites on Hispanics. It goes both ways. It's not reverse discrimination. It's just pure and simple discrimination. But,
the critical race theory people say is, well, it's racism only because whites have the power and the blacks don't. But there's times, like what you mentioned earlier in like the boot camp thing, whenever that minority has the power, well, they turn the table on that, you know.
Well, yeah, I think a prime example of that, if you go to East St. Louis right now, who has the power?
Yeah.
It's not some white guy sitting there, I can guarantee you that. So,
It's been a while since I've been to East St. Louis, but the last time I was there, going there in the daytime, you're just driving through, you're doing some business, you're stopping off to an office space, not a big deal. Once 5 p.m. rolls around and all the businesses close for the day, you don't want to be there.
Right, yeah.
Unless you have the right color of skin.
Last time was in 2004. I remember the exact day, and it was in broad daylight, but it's still very unnerving. And
lived in Springfield. I worked at the post office, which is in a very dark neighborhood. And even in the daytime, sometimes if you go to the end of the parking lot, you try to go further, you get some glares. What are you doing here? I missed my turn. I'm going on a block, all right?
Yeah. I actually had a real business there. Having been born there, I needed to get my copy of my birth certificate. But the guy that was there said, I don't know what you're doing here, but you need to get out of here soon.
People say, well, blacks don't have the power. But there are places where they do, and you encounter that. Now, it's equally just as not right when it happens that way. But they can't say, oh, you're white, you don't understand. Like, well, all it takes is a visit to the inner city and you'll understand.
Yeah. Going back to the unconscious bias, I think there are times, and I have experienced this both as a white and as a Hispanic person from both instances. Simple cases like if two people walk up to a sales clerk at about the same time, and you know let's say the sales clerk is white and she sees an African American white person and she doesn't know which one's which, so she waits on the white person first. That's an example of unconscious bias. But I've seen the same thing where a black sales clerk sees two people walk up. One's black, one's white. She waits on the black person first. It's an unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. And they may not mean anything by that. And if it was pointed out, hey, actually, the other person got here first, they would be like, oh, I'm sorry. And in that case, you would know it was simply a case of unconscious bias that they just didn't know. And, it's that the framework, the things that we're made up with. But I also blame that on one other thing, and that's that you tend to be more comfortable with the things you know. If you see two people walk up and one of them's a good friend, and they walk up about the same time, you're more likely to wait on your good friend than the other person, regardless of what kind of race or background or anything else is involved. So, you know, some of this unconscious bias, I think, could be better blamed on simply people.
There's a tribal issue there. People tend to gravitate towards people who are like them. And there's been studies done where, hey, you know, if you're at work, you work with who's there. You got people on your team, they're Mexican, they're black, they're from Arkansas, they're from wherever, you work with them. But now let's say it's after hours and you're at liberty. Do what you want. You're going to hang out to this big old open area. You're going to see groups of different minorities clustered together because that's people just naturally gravitate there. I mean, you might hang out with the guys in your shop, sure, but you may also find people gravitating to people, like you say, they feel comfortable around because they're similar.
Yeah, in the military, very often, you know, you see people that tend to hang around in groups based on race, but other times, though, you'll see two buddies form a close relationship that crosses those racial boundaries. And they won't hang with other races. They'd rather hang with each other because they form that bond, you know. And right. And they form that bond based on things like common interests, like maybe hunting or reading or sports or something. Or maybe they came from a geographical area, you know, those kinds of things. There were three of us that hung pretty tight in boot camp. Chambers, the two brothers, and I can't remember their names, and myself. But the two brothers were white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys, and they were brothers that had been born just a year or two apart. Chambers was the black guy from St. Louis, and then my Hispanic self. But we tended to hang together in boot camp because we were all from the St. Louis area, and so we crossed those racial boundaries,
right?
And hung together as a result of that. So you know, in that case, you know, you don't see. Only racial barriers being the bond.
And, you know, people talk about, you know, reconciling. And, you know, some people say, oh, you just can't reconcile. Well, that's because you don't want to. But whenever you do, just what you described, that's kind of what it looks like, is you get to know each other on a common ground. You know, in this case, whether it be you're all from St. Louis, you're all from a geographical area, or maybe work in the same shop, or maybe you, like I said, have the same hobby. Every human being has the same human needs, you know, and it doesn't matter where you come from. And if you let the cosmetic differences continue to divide, you'll never reconcile, and you'll never come together. You don't have to live together all the time. You don't have to marry the guy's sister.
Yeah.
But you can still be on very friendly terms and be, you know, probably as close as family, if not more so.
Yeah.
But this is what it looks like.
Oh, just to wrap it up, like I said, I've been on both sides of the fence. And for that reason, I've tried not to be a partaker of unconscious bias, as well as making sure that I'm not a victim of it as well. But I try to make sure that I'm not the one that perpetrates it myself, and try to make sure that I go across racial boundaries, you know, at church, at work, or you know, wherever I come across, and not let that be a hindrance. One of the things that I tend to note everywhere I go is that you know, when you increase your exposure to other people without regard to race or economic background or gender, everybody benefits, you know.
Right.
Just like, you know, in baseball, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, baseball became even more competitive. And now you've got a bigger pool of athletes to choose from that make the game even more interesting, you know.
Are you familiar with the starting lineup on the St. Louis Cardinals team?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't quote your names, but I know they got people from, I mean, Europe, from America, from Hispanic-sounding places. They got a very ethnic group on the starting lineup.
Yeah, Dominican Republic and places like that are, you know, are having a lot of people break into the major leagues. And, you know, it just makes it better for everybody. It increases the intensity of the game. So everybody benefits when you're willing to go past that. And from a biblical standpoint, which is to me the most important, is that Paul says there's neither Jew nor Greek. There's only the saints that have accepted Jesus Christ. And with that in your heart, it really doesn't matter what your skin color is. You're still lost.
And the gospel is definitely a unifying factor that anybody can unify under that. Definitely, and that's what we like to talk about here is gospel topics and how it applies to everyday life, every situation, and most definitely a divided racial system in America, which I think is just artificially created at this point. Not that there's not some reality to it, because there are still holdouts, some old KKK holdouts and some old rifts there. But I think more often than not, those rifts are not in the common psyche of most Americans. I did want to mention military, because that seems to be a big, another big issue of today, but you know, they're trying to push CRT into the academies and whatnot. But here's the magical thing about the military is, you know, it used to be they didn't have blacks in the same units as whites during World War II and previously. And I think around the Korean War era, they started mixing it up. And, by, of course, by Vietnam, it was all interracial. And whenever we were in, mostly during the 80s, it was, you know, relatively a peacetime era. There was some things happening. But what made the units that I was in really great is, yes, there was a lot of diversity. You had black kids from the city, white kids from the country, black kids from the country, white kids from the city, rich kids, poor kids. But it was very diverse. But what made the unity was we're all there for the same purpose. We're all there to do our job, you know, to learn our MOS and to, you know, perform a mission, which is, you know, military security, military forces, infantry was what I was in. We're there to go out in the jungles and keep enemies at bay. But that unified mission is what does it. And people will say, oh, yeah, everything is so diverse, diversity this, diversity that. But they're not saying, they're not identifying how we should be united. Oh, you're in the blue state, you believe that. You're in the red state, you believe that. Well, no, actually, I live in a blue state, but I don't believe anything that the blue people believe.
Yeah.
So you can't be slapping that label on me. But you got to have, you got to seek out that commonality, the human needs, and focus on that. And one big way to do that is at least come together on the gospel, at least come together on biblical teaching. That would be a good umbrella, and it has everlasting consequence, not just you follow the government laws till you die and that's it, like atheists would believe.
Yep. Well, I got to go. I appreciate you letting me be a part of your podcast.
Yeah, and it's great that you took time to take us along on your walk. Hey, this is Keith, co-host of Quest for Truth, and I wanted to take the time to feature a few of the fine podcasters you'll find over at ChristianPodcastCommunity.org. And you can find this page if you add /shows, and you'll find All God's Women with Sharon Wilharm. Hosted by Sharon Wilharm. a Bible study podcast, working our way through the Bible, one woman at a time. Doctrine Matters Podcast with Stephen Dew, hosted by Stephen Dew, a podcast from a Reformed Baptist perspective designed to help the church understand their faith and equip them to live out the faith. One Little Candle with Rebecca Berschwinger, hosted by Rebecca Berschwinger, dispelling the darkness with the light of God's truth while empowering believers to light their own little corner of the world. So, no matter which of these podcasters you choose to listen to, please do visit them at christianpodcastcommunity.org. If you add /shows behind the URL, you'll see all the shows that are listed there. Please do click on the podcast you want and listen to the shows, but also leave an email comment and email forms that are there and show a little support that way. It's free. It just takes a little bit of time, and the podcasters will know that you are listening. Hey, and if you do that, tell them how you heard about their show.
Welcome to the Blue Stocking Baptist Podcast. My name is Hannah Oliver, and I'm here with my co-host, Esther Faulkner. Esther and I are both particular Baptists who hold to the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith. The Blue Stocking Baptist Podcast is an informal podcast for women with intelligent and literary interests related to Christian doctrine and life. Esther and I both have a passion to see unbelievers come to the faith, and so we hope our material will be used for the furtherance of God's kingdom. You can email us at thebluestockingbaptist@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at The Blue Stocking Baptist or on Twitter at SheBaptists. Thank you so much, and God bless, guys.
All right. That was my brief conversation with my longtime childhood friend, Tony Rangel. And hey, again, I would highly recommend checking out Cross Point Southern Baptist Church. They're in Edwardsville, Illinois. Drop in if you can. Check them out on YouTube if you can. And I'm glad, however you might drop in, hey, drop him a line. Let him know how you found his church. So there we go. Now, you know, over the last week, I almost dropped it in on the previous podcast on a post-production to their post-production, because it was, you know, the weekend of 9/11, and there was something that kind of disturbed me with that, and that was the speech given by former President George W. Bush, where he, I'm sure you saw the clip, where he claimed that domestic terror is just as bad as foreign terror, and if you have overlap with the Taliban, that you are malicious and violent and want to tear down our national monuments, and that needs to stop. Well, I only heard the clip, and my first reaction was, oh, wow, he's taking a stance on Antifa and BLM because they're violent, they hate our country, and they're trying to tear down national monuments. Then I heard other commentaries that says, oh, no, he's talking about January 6th. And I thought, but they don't fit those criteria because they don't want to tear down our national monuments. They only want to do, they did some violence. They were stupid. They were trying to make their point. You know, they may have been a little bit over the top. But they weren't trying to tear anything down. They were just trying to, what they perceived, people were doing a wrong thing. And honestly, I don't know what they would overcome or do. But the point I'm trying to make here is, whenever it comes to the race issue, what comes around goes around. Both sides are and can be equally wrong about your views. And we rant about racism from the white side, but no one's ever talking about racism from the non-white side. And I thought Tony made some good points talking about unconscious bias. But, you know, the people who overcome that is, as you mentioned, once it's pointed out, you have an aha moment, and you realize, well, I feel so dumb, and you make amends, you apologize, you reconcile, and that becomes your moment that you know that, honestly, you're not racist. You just, you were unconscious about it. It was unintentional. But for those people who don't get there, and it doesn't matter what color you are or what side of an issue you're on, anybody and everybody has that to overcome. And you can't point fingers at one group or the other. It's an issue that everyone needs to work on. You can't bash people with white guilt or black guilt or brown guilt or any other color guilt, because everyone has that to overcome. And I suppose that's all I got to say on the issue for now. I don't want to drag this out for too long. I thought I'd take a little bit of time, since the actual discussion was a little bit on the shorter side. So now I've rambled on to make this a long podcast. Didn't mean to. Oh, and one final thing. Tony did point out the verses. You know, there are no Jew nor Greek. We're all one human race in Christ. So if you're in Christ, there should never, ever be an issue with Jew, Gentile, black, white, or any race. We're all one in Christ. Christ is a unifying factor. Now, if you're not in Christ, well, you got some things to work out. And I hope that through listening to this podcast that those do get worked out. And Nathan and I did cover that very same scripture. It's been a few weeks back. I forget what the name of the show was. You'll have to go to the webpage and do a search for us talking about that. Because we actually did a kind of a short Bible study commentary kind of a show. Anyway, that's what I have for now. Well, I'll see you next week. Hey, thanks for listening. Tell a friend about us, because really the word of mouth is how we really expand our audience and listenership. But hey, if you found us on a podcatcher, a podcatching directory, leave a rating and review on Google or Apple Podcasts, wherever you found us. But if you do that, we don't always check those. It's kind of hard. But leave us an email. And hey, you know what? Here comes our announcer, voice of the podcast, Anthony Russo, to tell you all about how you can do that. So take it away. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.
Visit life-truth.com, where you can find all our shows. Leave a message or call our voicemail number at 401-753-4844. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/lifetruthpage. Follow us on Twitter at HNCAST. Everything Nathan Caldwell does can be found at facebook.com/protectorsofthebook. Music in the show is used by permission of Kevin Zerbe at zerbinator.wordpress.com. May the word of Christ dwell in you richly. May you find everything you need. And if you don't know Jesus, your greatest need is a Savior. Thanks for listening.